United Auto Workers.
Welcome aboard. Okay. Well, tonight our segment, we're going to highlight the Affordable Care Act and its impact here in Oregon. And tonight we have a guest, and she is an excellent guest, and she will help you have a better understanding of what this, what all the hoopla about the Affordable Care Act is, and she will answer your those questions that we know that you have about this very complicated process. But before we get started into that segment, I'd like to remind you a couple of things about the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Number one, we are an international organization. We have about 51 chapters throughout the United States and Canada. We are divided into 10 regions. Oregon is located in Region 10. That includes Washington State, Nevada, Northern and Southern California. Begins at about, we are affiliated with the Oregon chapter of the AFL-CIO and also the national chapter. Our mission is that we are a conduit representing our respective international unions to bridge a gap between the Black community and organized labor. As I stated earlier, our segment tonight is about the Affordable Care Act. And our guest tonight is Mish Amor-Amatz. Sister Audrey, can you introduce our guest speaker tonight?
I would love to. This evening, we have Mish Amor-Amatz with us. She's a grant and research coordinator. She graduated from Cal State University Hayward with a BA in anthropology and a minor in biology. She also graduated from the Oregon Health Sciences University with a degree in MBA, healthcare disparities. She has over 20 years experience in doing work that seeks to reduce health and social disparities and the relationships between adverse events and long-term disparate outcomes, especially as they relate to minority and undeserved populations and community engagement. She feels it's far from complete, and we need more to be done to build and promote equity on behalf of communities of color. Mish's passion is empowering and engaging and providing a voice for the unheard and invisible. And this is fulfilled via the multiple roles that Mish does. Number one, she is the chair of the NAACP Health Committee. In addition, she is Oregon Regional Manager for the Lupus Foundation of America, PNW chapter. She is a research and grant coordinator for DHS-OHA. She has a lot of background with her. I want her to go ahead and speak, so I won't go on with all her wonderful experience. She does say her greatest hope is that the work that she does will be integral in reducing systematic imbalances in the healthcare delivery system that disproportionately affect people of color, the disabled, the LGBT community, and the poor, adequately addressing not only individual health issues, but also workforce development of diversity in the medical and public health professions. She's so much concerned in so many different areas. I'm just honored to have her to serve as the Portland NAACP Health Chair. So I'm just going to stop talking because you're loaded with information and we're just dying to hear. So tell us more about your passion and your work in the healthcare, especially regarding this affordable healthcare.
Before I delve in, I just want to make one small correction. I am still a graduate student at OHSU, so I have a little bit more time to go, about a year. But yes, I'm getting my degree in public health with a focus on community disparities. And I was asked here to speak tonight. Thank you both, Tina and Dr. Terrell, for having me. So excited. Because as a part of my program at school, I'm very passionate, for those of you who know me, about the intersects between health and wellness and economic development, mental health of populations. And the Affordable Care Act actually has 10 sections to it. And when I talked about it in class at school, there were so many people who didn't realize it. And so I spoke with Dr. Terrell and Donna Maxey, who does race talks, and said, could we put something together so that the community really understands? When we look at disparities, especially in the African and Native American communities, we find that the disproportion is huge. We die at a higher rate across the board, whether it's diabetes, cardiovascular disease, asthma, lupus, which is something that I also have, which is why I'm involved in the Lupus Foundation. We are getting chronic illnesses and dying at a rate that is very alarming. And scientists are taking note, because it isn't just impacting African Americans. Actually, we see the same outcomes for African immigrants who move to the United States within 5 years or by the second generation, so such as low birth weight or high maternal death. So they're starting to realize that there are things that are happening. And when we think of the Affordable Care Act, people just think insurance, but they don't think about all of the other parts. So there are 10 parts, and they... I'll talk about how it impacts economics first. So right now, if you are African American and you're working and you're having income, you're still going, the average African American working family is still going to make $20,000 less than all other ethnicities, with the exception of Native Americans. And that's really huge. So if we also have higher health costs, then that really means even less money in pocket. So when we're looking at economics and poverty, there are lots of things that come into play. We also see over time that there are less African Americans that have gone into the health field because it's very expensive. So this is where the Affordable Care Act comes in. So first of all, it provides, the first part of it is providing affordable health care to all Americans. That's a given. The second part of it is its role in public programs. So it's going to allow the states that enroll or allow for the additional Medicaid coverage, which the state of Oregon is, so African Americans in our state will not be impacted by this, as other African Americans will be in states that have chosen not to extend the Medicaid. The third part of the Affordable Care Act is it's going to improve the quality and efficiency of healthcare, and that's actually really important, because just because we got access to care doesn't mean that African Americans will have better outcomes, because African Americans who are currently insured, we're actually insured at about a rate of 89%, but we still have worse outcomes. The Affordable Care Act has built into it measures and titles that require those who have health care or who provide the health care to make sure that it is culturally appropriate and that it meets the needs of their population that they're serving, and they have metrics or measurements to follow up on that. So we haven't seen that before in healthcare, and that's pretty amazing. And so another, the next one of it is the fourth part, and that's the prevention of chronic disease and the improvement of public health. Again, that's amazing. What this piece does is it has funneled money into our community health centers. We do not have enough of them in the Portland metro region or Oregon as a whole that serve populations of color. So this is going to create more money for us to be able to have more public health, community public health centers, which have been shown to be the best way for preventative service. And it's also the section that requires restaurants to put their calorie content in foods. And those are little pieces of it. But the big piece is the money that's being funneled into public and community health. The next part is the fifth part, and that's the healthcare workforce. And so this established a workforce commission to look at what our workforce needs are and to make those recommendations. And again, this provides major expansions for community health centers and for National Health Service Corps. So that's more funding that's going to go to those areas. In the Title VI, there's transparency and program integrity. This gives new authority to the federal and state agencies that are going to be able to look at fraud in Medicare. Currently, if you receive Medicare or Medicaid, some of the reasons for the disparate outcomes is you are given services or treatments that you don't actually need, or invasive procedures, because they can bill for those but actually don't help your health, and sometimes can make health even worse. So this is starting to say, what are the reasons for that treatment? Are we really doing what's necessary? And are we giving the best treatment for what the issue is? And it's going to require that just because you get Medicare or Medicaid, you are not charged more money for something that you don't need. So that's very good. It also requires the nursing home industry to provide information that will protect and empower patients and their families. And as someone who works for the Office of Adult Abuse Prevention and Investigations, this is very important for us to know. That's something that our office oversees, for us to know that there are going to be measures put in place for transparency to support the work that we do. Title VII is improving access to allows the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to develop a regulatory pathway that will permit development, manufacturing, and marketing, as well as the sale of biosimilar biological products and generic-like versions. So it will end the anti-competitive efforts. So a great example is right now African Americans have a high rate of asthma. However, albuterol is extremely expensive. It's ridiculously expensive, and that's because they have a patent, and so no one else can make that medication. And the price has recently gone up because their patent is going to be ending soon. So this will allow for a more competitive process with the medications that are made so that you won't have to pay as much for something that really could benefit. It's life-saving. African Americans die from asthma in alarming numbers. And it really, often it's because of the lack of ability to afford some of the expensive care and other reasons, obviously. But this will help address some of that. And it also offers drug discounts to hospitals and communities that serve low-income patients. Title VIII is the Community Living Assistance Support Services, and the acronym is CLASS. And this authorizes a new national and voluntary long-term disability insurance program to provide workers with daily cash payments. So I would love to go on and on about this one, but unfortunately, the Obama administration announced that it's going to have to drop this on October 15th because of Congress. And once I get through all of these, I'll say it now. It's very critical to stay engaged around the Affordable Care Act and to understand what it means for our communities, to write our senators and our congressmen, to make phone calls, to sign up. And we'll talk more towards the end on how you can do that, because if we don't fight for it, they will try and chip away at pieces that really make a difference. And the piece for those who are disabled is a critical piece. Chapter 9 is revenue provisions, and this covers the financing for slightly less than half the cost of the Affordable Care Act. So this establishes new Medicare taxes on high-income wage earners. Currently, the rates aren't income contingent. So this kind of moves things. So if you make a little bit more, then you pay a little bit more into Medicare, as well as taxes on pharmaceutical manufacturers, health insurance providers, and medical device manufacturers. So this excise tax on high cost, as well as high cost employer insurance. So if you have insurance that's very, very, will help spread the cost for those who maybe can't afford it, which is really how it should be. Healthcare should be a right. It shouldn't be a privilege. Healthcare should be a right. And so the Affordable Care Act is really paving the way for us to get even closer to that in the United States. And it's very important to think about this. The United States is one of few industrialized countries that doesn't offer health care to its citizens. So that's kind of something to think about. You can go to the NAACP Facebook page that has more links to how many countries provide health care that we don't. Title 10 is strengthening quality, affordable health care for all Americans. So this is kind of the manager's amendment, and it includes amendments in addition to Titles 1 through 9, and it reflects the unusual legislative process that was used to pass the Affordable Care Act. And so the Titles 1 through 10 were approved in a separate measure called the Health Care and Education Reconciliation Act, and they were signed into law by Obama the first week after he signed the base law on March 23rd, 2010. And this title also reauthorizes the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, which is important, which provides health care to American Indians and Alaskan Natives. There are also some substantive provisions to the Affordable Care Act. There are those that forgive federally subsidized student loans for recent medical school graduates, which is very important. These individuals will have money deducted from their loans based on the type of medicine they practice, with certain high-demand disciplines eligible for early release, like primary care is a great example. We need more primary care physicians. It establishes a new loan repayment program where individuals who commit to working in pediatric and adolescent health care can receive government stipends, which means you'll actually get money while you're doing it, because a barrier to being able to go into the health field is not just the cost, but how do you afford to take care of yourself while you're in school if you really don't have time to work? So that's a crucial piece. And this section allows for payments on the principal amount of up to $35,000 per year of service. It's wonderful. Then there's the public health workforce loan repayment. So this is very new. We've traditionally had things that help nurses, doctors, people who go into early childhood education. But there's a recognition that public health is a driving force in overall wellness and health. And so this is putting money where their mouth is, for lack of a better term. And it's allowing anyone who has graduated from an accredited school in public health in the last 10 years to receive support by committing to the public health field, with up to $105,000 of student loans being forgivable. I'm getting the chills just thinking about it as a public health major. So that's amazing. And we need more. Again, you can go to the Facebook page if you need more information. Again, there's things that are going to funnel money into federal disaster teams, the establishment of pregnancy assistance funds for universities that are going to expand pregnant and parenting student services. So if you do have children, it won't be a barrier to going and getting higher education. It will encourage the expansion of on-campus childcare, flexible academic scheduling, maternity items, and requirement of the addition of large family-style housing. There's a gateway for possible loan forgiveness for students who are working towards a bachelor's degree or a master's or a doctoral in psychology, which hasn't been there before. And then the last one is there are fellowships that can aid in training workforce development. So maybe you've done something else, but you need a new career or you were laid off. So it's going to put money into training, workforce development, and placement of students. Again, these are all amazing things.
Wow. We should have titled the show, Everything You Wanted to Know About the ACA. For those of us that have just joined us, again, this is the labor radio section of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists here on KABU, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. Wow.
So you're saying, Mish, that I can find all that information if you go to the NAACP website, Facebook, I'll be able to get that information. We want to make sure we do that, because that was a lot of information that we don't normally hear. And thank you so much for bringing that to our awareness. But it's available, again, through the NAACP webpage.
If you go to the Facebook page of the NAACP Unit 1120 Health Committee, and it's the Portland chapter, there are links to our website, the NAACP website, so you can know about all our events. And then this evening we'll be uploading a link to this document. We'll be linking also to other places that I'll talk about as more in the program. But yes, there will be all the links there within the next day or two for all the things that we've discussed this evening.
Good. So, I remember we were at Race Talk and they were asking a whole lot of questions. Which was, I'm standing there just being fed with from learning just what the affordable health care, the timelines that we have, which we have passed the timeline to get it. Have we? I'm not really sure. You want to reiterate that?
Okay. So if you haven't signed up yet, you haven't missed the deadline for sign up. So you actually have until March, but you won't have the coverage until you actually sign up. However, if you have signed up, right? So there are two pieces, and we'll have a link to both of these on the website. One of them is if you are eligible for the Oregon Health Plan, and you go in and you go through the process, and it says that you've completed your application and you're qualified, then you're done. You're good to go. You'll be getting your information. There's a link on the website that will direct you to the DHS OHA website that will give you all the information you could possibly want, tell you not to worry, you'll be getting your paper in the mail, but you are fine. If you aren't eligible for the Oregon Health Plan and you've filled in the paperwork, you've completed it, and it says, great, you're completed, you're done, you're signed up. Until you pay your first premium, you are not insured. So that's really critical. And a lot of people aren't aware of that. And we will have a link to the Urban League for you to get amazing work. And I let them know, I called them today, so they're going to be ready for a deluge of calls. But they'll help you navigate what you need to do. They have people on board for that, and they'll help you get that set up. You can always send us a message on Facebook as well, and I can help you navigate to someone in the Urban League if you find that you get stuck. But we certainly have those pieces available for you there. There's a third piece, though, that's actually really important. So let's say that you have your insurance, but you have a change. Right now, if you have insurance and you have a child, automatically you can make a change to your health care. Or if you get married, or if, God forbid, someone passes away. The Affordable Care Act, what people are hearing is that the Affordable Care Act doesn't allow you to make those changes. That's actually incorrect. It does. However, as with any rollout, there are always going to be glitches. Software never works on the first rollout. The system is not currently set up to make those changes yet. So we will be hearing about how they're going to navigate that. So the Affordable Care Act will allow you to make those changes. It's just not in the system yet. Even still, don't worry. We'll figure it out as we go. Cover Oregon, between Cover Oregon, Urban League, and, you know, the NAACP Health Committee, really in Oregon, we are doing much better than lots of other states are. Our system is amazing. We have great people on board. And just be patient and breathe, and it will all work itself out.
So it sounds like this Affordable Care Act is more than just a health care system. It sounds like it's doing a hell of a lot more. Is that about right?
It is. It is. One of the pieces that I am particularly passionate about is how our health and wellness impacts our overall well-being, which impacts how we can earn money. And as a family that has spent, because of the chronic illness that I have, we spend a disproportionate amount of our income on my care, because you can only put so much in a flex spending account. That what the Affordable Care Act means is, for the rest of my life, I can have insurance. I don't have to worry. So if I can't work full time, I don't have to work full time and have maybe less time of living because I'm working when I shouldn't be working, because I can get health care now. But what it also means is that there are other things that can help. So my student loans can help be paid off. There'll be ways for me to pay less for the medication that I take, which is very expensive, I mean, between chemo and all of the other medications. So for a family, especially an African-American family, this is money in your pocket. There's just no other way of putting it. It really is going to impact the economic platform for underserved communities in a way that nothing has since Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid.
Well, just listening to you, I am so glad I am a union retiree, because we negotiated for medical, and even as a retiree, we still get our medical, but I'm still concerned about, oh yes, and I'm going on 62, so I get that Medicare and Medicaid, but all I'm saying is I am so glad, because as activists, we're concerned about those who aren't able to get health care. And with this affordable health care, how can our family members and neighbors, community, can get accessibility? And you need to know how it covers you. And that's so good to know. You have been so informative tonight. And I really appreciate you so much.
Yes. I first met you at the Race Talks and talking about this Affordable Care Act. And I can't tell you how excited I was, because I came away from that meeting with a better understanding, yes, a very simplistic understanding of exactly what the true nature of the Affordable Care Act is. And so, again, I would really like to thank you for taking the time out and coming and talking to us about it, and solidifying it into the 10 easy steps about what everything you wanted to know about the Affordable Care Act. And talking about the connection with the disparity, the income disparities.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. I've appreciated being here, and I hope to come back. And if people want to come on February 1st to the Native American Student Center at PSU. It's a Saturday from 10:30 to noon. I will be there hosting an event for communities of color on how food impacts our well-being. You're free to come. You just have to sign up through the Facebook page or the NAACP website. But again, I will have this information there with me as well for people who may have questions, and I'll be inviting Urban League and community health workers to that event. So we'll be answering questions there as well.
Marvelous. We would love to have you come back again. And for the listeners out there, our intent is to also invite the Urban League to join us for Labor Radio so that they can do it. We'll do a segment on the frequently most asked questions so that it will better prepare you in the community, those who are eligible for to sign up for the Affordable Care Act, in order to do so. So for the last 2 minutes, actually about a minute and a half, I'd like to turn the mic over to Sister Terrell. She has some great news for us.
I'd just like to say that 2014, the NAACP is moving. We've got things planned. We strategically planned, had meetings last year, and currently we will be, if the Department of Justice has submitted a settlement agreement on the Albano Ministerial Alliance case against the Portland Police Department. But the NAACP will host several educational forums in the next six weeks to inform the community on this settlement. There will be a settlement hearing on February the 18th regarding this at the Department of Justice. But it will be the NAACP who will stand for informing the community just on this settlement agreement. The NAACP will publish the dates and times in the near future, so look for those announcements. But we are elated. We've got a lot of things. We've been a year now, and we've gotten ourselves together, so that we're going to stand firm in the community, keeping them educated on what's going on in the social justice arena, in health care issues, and any other issues that comes up that community needs to know. So thank you for the opportunity, Sister Tina, for allowing me to say this, but we've got a lot of work ahead of us. It's not over. We're excited about it. And thank you so much, Mies, for that information. Thank you for the work that you do with the NAACP. We're delighted to have you. And we certainly will support you and all your efforts that you're trying to do. And we're just delighted for this opportunity to share it at this time with you, Tina.
So in closing, I'd like to remind you that this is the Labor Radio. It is the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists section. I'd like to invite you to meet with us. The Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, we meet every first Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. at the American Federation of State and County Municipal Employee Building. It's called the William Lucy Building. It's located at 6025 East Burnside. So that's tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, our agenda will talk about what our yearly community events will be. One to include a spring blood drive called the Charles Drew Blood Drive. It is the only one in the nation that is connected with the doctor. And so again, if you'd like to contact us, you can do so through our email address. It's orcbtu10@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please join us in our evolving adventure of representing Black union workers. Again, signing off for the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Thank you very much.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
The KBOO Community Radio Artist in Residence Program assists artists working creatively with sound. Every year, one artist or one collaborative group of artists will be awarded 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KBOO mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. The Artist in Residence program is open to artists of all disciplines whose project proposals include sound as a major component. The deadline to apply to be the 2014 KBOO Artist in Residence is February 14th. More information on the Artists in Residence program, including eligibility, selection process, and the application, can be found at kbu.fm/AIR2014.
My first time ever on the radio was on KBOO about 10 years ago on the Soundbox with Dina B. And I've been doing radio ever since. I love KBOO.
KBOO is such a friendly, laid-back, fun environment. There's a lot of freedom here.
Boy, all I can say is that they just give me the complete freedom to play every single thing I feel like playing. And that's a rare thing in radio stations nowadays, and I sure appreciate it.
It's a passion of mine to investigate and to find and to share.
Come on down to the next volunteer orientation on Wednesday, January 8th from 7 to 9 p.m. here at the KBOO Studios at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad.
Hello and welcome to Prison Pipeline on KB.